I think proceed. So I think the father, if my father is the dominant Hindu person, because of my mother's health problems, she also had diabetes, but that was not because of her demise. We were very comfortable during the Depression years. We had an automobile. We drove in summer to Atlantic City. I went to Shenley High School. Alderdice High had just been built, and it was the choice of, I think, going to Alderdice or going to Shenley, and I had friends who were going to Shenley, so I went to Shenley High School. My high school years were not very distinguished. Incidentally, I must have skipped a grade because I graduated high school. I made a note the other day. I graduated high school at age 16. So I think I skipped grades in grade school then to have gotten into high school this early. Shenley High School, I did contribute to the Shenley Triangle. That was the newspaper, which incidentally my wife Gertrude is subsequently editor. She and I did not go to the same school at the same time. I contributed some pieces. I was not an editorial writer nor a staff writer, but I was an occasional feature writer. And in high school, a friend and I said, let's join the band. And I said, fine, I'd like to take up the clarinet. He said, fine, I'll take up the trombone. But unfortunately, there were no clarinets available, so I was given a trombone. And this was fine. I was given lessons by the high school band teacher and then subsequently private lessons, and I became very good at it. And I enjoyed it. I became a member of the All-City High School Band. And I remember performing at the late Forbes Field, occasions were a yearly festival of high school students of dance, drama, and song. I'm not sure what it was called. Are you from Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Do you remember any of that? And I remember being a member of the All-City Band and playing with those. And it was, I enjoyed the experience of being with a group playing music. So after otherwise an undistinguished high school career,
maybe backtrack a little bit, Paul, to talk about these. You were here in Pittsburgh through your bar mitzvah years, confirmation,
yes, of course. I'm sorry. We joined Beth Sholem. And I was bar mitzvah at Beth Sholem. I can candidly say that I didn't like services at Beth Sholem. I didn't like being bar mitzvah. And one of the incidents that stands out so well in my mind, and which was probably one of the incidents that gave me my feelings, my objective senses about what religion was this. As little boys at age 13, we all had beanies, caps. You may or you may not remember. They're just little like skull caps made of felt and so on. And on these beanie caps we had buttons, all these buttons of those who are running for Congress and presidential buttons and so on and so on and so on. And this was a trend then, just like the trend now of baseball caps to be worn backwards. So I would go to my lessons for bar mitzvah, and the very stern instructor would say, "No Jewish boy should wear a beanie cap with buttons on it. Smack!" So I said, "Religion is not for me." Or I didn't say it, but I sensed it. How little, they don't realize what little events in a child's life can so influence them. These are insensitive individuals. But anyway, I was bar mitzvah. Just a couple other interesting items. Kennywood Park was not far. We would take a streetcar, a group of us kids in grade school would take a streetcar to Kennywood Park. And there were machines where you would put a nickel or a penny in a machine, I guess, in those days. You would get a gumball and a picture of a baseball player. And I remember getting pictures of Honus Wagner, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a collection of hundreds of these, which I have long ago discarded. When I went to high school, to college, I said, "Who needs these? These are for kids." They represented now hundreds of thousands of dollars in value. But past history. There was another very interesting hobby that children in those days released those. Hollywood was very new, and the Hollywood stars would send a picture, an autographed picture. So we would write to all the movie stars and get an autographed picture. And again, I had hundreds of those, long since discarded in the rubbish. Well, let's see, that brings me up to college. Now, I could have gone elsewhere to college, but we were kind of inward-looking. I didn't have a family that had a broad interest in education. They had gone not beyond high school, and they were not very worldly. So we have the University of Pittsburgh. Go to Pitt. I hardly knew that there was a college outside of Pitt. So I did go to Pitt, and I started at Pitt at age 16. And, in high school, really, when did I decide to become a physician? Probably in my last year, or maybe the last 2 years of high school. And I kind of thought it over. What do I want to do? I'm not going to be an attorney. I was not that vocal, and so on. I'm not going to be a school teacher. I'm not going into business. I have no business acumen. Well, but I didn't have the mentation to become a physicist or a mathematician. So what's a good profession for a Jewish boy who's just a little better than average? Become a physician. I like that. So I'm going to become a doctor. So that was the way I arrived at it. Maybe we had a neighbor who was a general practitioner. I remember breaking my wrist and having him take care of it. It was a pleasant experience. My father had pneumonia, and he came to our home every day to sit at his bedside. And this was the, remember the picture of the physician sitting at the bedside of the child, a famous picture. And this is, in those days, what did one have off to offer? There was no antibiotics. There was really nothing very specific. So you gave the patient and the family the time, attention, the comfort, the solace, which may have had some effect on your immune system. Who knows? This may have really had some benefit. So that this may have been a factor. I mean, it was a man who I had respect for, and I saw him treating people and helping people, at least helping my family. So this may have had some subliminal effect on my decision to become a physician. His name in family was Zabarenko.
Zabarenko.
And his son became a psychiatrist named Zabarenko, who's now deceased. This is, we're getting away from the
Z-A-B-A-R-E-N-K-O.
Zabarenko.
A-N-K-O. Yeah.
His
first name, yeah.
I remember. His late son's wife is Lucy, who's a PhD psychologist, and I still see her occasionally. In high school, of course, I joined a band, obviously. And
at Pitt, you said.
At Pitt, I'm sorry.
Yes.
So when I entered Pitt, I joined the band again. And I enjoyed traveling with the band and performing with the band. But there was something else that, that was of interest to Pitt. Not academically. I was a good student. I was not Phi Beta Kappa, but a good student. I became acquainted with a group of young men of my age in East Liberty who had a club called the Friendship Club. We met at the Late Y in Oakland. It was a very exclusive club. In order to gain membership, one had to do a book review of a Russian novelist. And I reviewed War and Peace by Tolstoy. So therefore, I was admitted. There are a lot of, we had a lot of applicants, but the applicants were rejected because they could not or would not submit to the requirement to join. Most of the men in this club, there are very few, maybe a dozen or so. Saul Weisberg of UJF was a member. The late Saul Shapira was a member of the club. There are a few others. One was another man named Shapira who was a very talented man. He played beautiful jazz piano and rode a motorcycle. And another one became an engineer who moved out of the city. I think he's deceased. Harry Bloom, B-O-U-M, who I still see, is now living at Weinberg Terrace. There were two or three others, but there was a small group, and we really spent our time in academic pursuits. This was not a baseball, football playing group. This was an academic group. We would go to museums or discuss current events or go to a lecture or do something of that nature. I had to apply to medical school, and it was obvious that the place to make a real effort was Pitt. And you know, in those days, there were very few students. In my class of 53, there were six Jewish students. I was admitted to Pitt at the end of my second year. I applied in my second year of college and was admitted. So I said, I'm taking no chances. I'm going to go. I'm not going to finish college.
That's amazing.
So I was age 18. when I started medical school. I was the youngest person in the class. I did one there was one thing unfortunate in my life. I gave up the trombone. I should have continued to play it. Oh, while I was going to high school, I did play. Oh, when I was going to college, I did play in a jazz band. We played it at bar mitzvahs and Italian weddings. it was fun, but I gave it up after that. And I foolishly did. I thought, oh, I need all the time to pursue my studies. And so years later, I bought a trombone. I still have it. Once in a while, I blow it. I'm not very good at it anymore, and I'm afraid that I'll disrupt the other owners of apartments, so I don't play it very often. I keep threatening to take lessons again. I threaten myself. Years at medical school were pleasant. I didn't find it terribly difficult. It was a lot of rote. In those days, there weren't many diseases, you know. There were diseases, but nobody knew. There were what? No cures for them. So we spent a whole year in anatomy class with a cadaver, and my partner was a man named Hoffman, who's now deceased, who subsequently moved to California at the time of after the war, but that's nothing to do. Oh, one other thing, I forgot something really very important that had an impact in my life. When I went to high school, I had friends who were kind of athletic. Fredmans were their names. They had a basketball team that would, and I became the manager of the basketball team. And we would play, and this was some kind of league. We would play in Garfield and Greenfield and so on. And I do remember those games, particularly if we won, because the moment we won a game, we ran to the locker, grabbed the clothes, I grabbed the balls, the basketballs, and we ran as fast. The team would not even dress. They went out in their shoes, ran for a streetcar as fast as they could, because if you lost in Greenfield or you lost in Garfield, you were pummeled. And I was in charge of arranging the schedule for them and getting the games.
You had a lot of great experiences.
No, that was, well, that's my only athletic experience.
Except for your home run.
Except for the home run that I made. and the neurotic teams by Woody Allen.
Yes.
Well, now go back to...
Somewhere along the line, did you meet Durfee?
Oh, that's another story. That comes later.
Oh, that's later. All right.
So medical school was not difficult. It was just long and hard. I would spend hours in the evening memorizing. And the clinical experiences then were nothing as they are now. At those days, you spend 2 years in a laboratory, physiology, chemistry, anatomy, biochemistry, pathology laboratory, because there was not much else to learn about clinical disease. And then we had no, remember those are days, there were no MRIs or CT scans or elaborate testing. There was an x-ray of the chest and an x-ray of the bones, and that was the extent. I did well. I was not AOA. I was not in the top 5 to 10%. But I graduated with honors, not with high honors, but satisfactorily. Well, then it came time to intern, And I applied really to two institutions. I applied to Allegheny General and to Montefiore. And I remember meeting the late Grauer, who was on the staff of Allegheny General. He was head of the Singer Laboratories. And he said, no Jewish, this is not, Allegheny's not for Jewish boys. There aren't any Jewish interns there. But for some reason, I was admitted as a resident. But Grauer said, he kind of subliminally dissuaded me from going, so I interned at Montefiore Hospital. And it was a satisfactory year. Saw a lot of clinical material and made rounds with people whose names probably are unknown to you. A man named Manuel Friedberg. In retrospect, he was very bombastic but didn't have great depth of knowledge. I didn't know it then, but I know it now. Werner Kallmann was a very decent fellow. And the late Shapiro, who was a neurologist, who I became very fond of, and also became fond of me. I remember his face. There was a man at Montefiore named Yard Dulia, who was a pathologist. And I had a tremendous amount of respect for him. We would all go to his office to discuss cases. He had more clinical knowledge as a pathologist than many of the rounding clinicians. And that's why I remember his name, and I remember him with great fondness. He still has family living in Pittsburgh, and I did speak one day to his daughter and mentioned my fond remembrance and recall of Yard Dulia. After my internship, I applied to Beth Israel Hospital in Boston, and I was admitted. Their admissions were July and January, so I was admitted for a January residency. So I spent there for 6 months between then at a CCC camp as their physician until I went to Boston. And incidentally, while I was in medical school, I joined the ROTC. It was just on graduation. You were asked if you wanted to become a member of the ROTC, and I said, yes, I would become a member, and so I joined the ROTC. But it did involve, before graduation, 2 years before graduation, I think I joined, and we went to summer camp once, and that was that's the extent. There was no military training. But then I spent a year in Boston.
Were there any interesting experiences at the CCC camp?
The experiences was being out in the country and out in the woods and living in a cabin and really enjoying a period with nature. Yes, that was the interesting experience.
Where was the CCC camp?
In Maryland. Yes, it was an interesting experience. It was kind of comfortable with solitude. There were other officers there, no other physician, but other officers, and it was a pleasant 6 months, hardly educational. I spent a year in Boston at Beth Israel Hospital. I was really exposed to the acme of medicine then, and overwhelming, in fact. Because the medical education at Pitt, it was never an equality of the education at Harvard, and these were the colleagues that I had. I returned to Pittsburgh, and deciding what to do, and there was a man named Eisenstein, who was in general practice and family practice in West End. I may have met him at Montefiore. He said, E-I-S-E-N-S-T-E-I-N. A very bright fellow. And he said to me, and I met him when I came back to Montefiore again when I was visiting, and he said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. And he said, I'm going to leave my practice to study psychiatry. Would you like to assume my practice? And I said, fine. So I spent a few months making house calls with him and staying in his office until he went to New York to whatever institution he was with, and then I assumed his practice. And this was in a sense a country practice within the city, and there were so many experiences there that this will take another day to finish them. I'm not sure I should go ahead with those at this point. I'm going to return to that later if time permits, because there are other details. And I made some notes this morning about items in my life. I had some social life during these years, but I had a preconceived notion of who I wanted to marry. I wanted to marry a woman who had three B's: bright, blonde, and beautiful. And I think in that order. Well, maybe it was the order of bright, beautiful, and blonde, but I'm not sure anymore. And one day, or one evening, a friend called and said, would you like to have a date tonight? Would you like to go out? Yes. I said, well, I'm going to, I have a friend that I'd like to arrange a date with you, and this was somebody else. This was a brunette, not blonde. And I'm going to have a friend that I like to go with named Gertrude Forman. Well, Gertrude Forman was teaching high school then in Allison Park, and she had papers to grade, and she objected to going out, but he prevailed upon her. So that evening they came to my apartment, and I was making a house visit, and I came back, and Gertrude brought all of her student papers with her to correct. And she was lying on the floor correcting the papers when I came in, and I looked at her and I said, she's bright, she's blonde, and she's beautiful. I'm going to marry her.
Oh, very nice. Oh, that's a wonderful story.
And we traded dates that night. And we both fell in love immediately.
That's beautiful.
Our first date in Delhi was at the Ballet Russe the Monte Carlo at the old Nixon Theater. I was working, she was teaching. We both went there to the ballet. Neither of us had dinner at intermission. We said, what are you thinking of? We both said to each other, and we both said, we're thinking of dinner. So after the ballet, we went to, it was a restaurant, the Nixon restaurant right below the theater, where we had, I can recall, steak. That was our first date. The best decision I ever made in my life is marrying Gertrude.